to the Kurt Landry Podcast, where we're going to help you discover your kingdom destiny. My name is Daryl, and sitting right beside me in this episode is Rabbi Kurt Landry himself. And in this exact episode, our topic of discussion is all about spiritual fatherhood. What is it, and do I need it? But before we jump in, Rabbi, how was the weekend? How you feeling? What's happening in your world?
Hey, Daryl, we're doing great. Listen, I'm really excited. You know, some of the last couple episodes that we have discussed on the podcast have been just so edifying to me and encouraging, things that are deep in my heart that I've always wanted to share. And so I'm hoping that you're enjoying it. Now, this subject is key. Now, I want to break it down into a couple of layers here so that you can get yourself focused on this podcast. Number one, the reason you need to know about spiritual fatherhood is, number one, if you're going to interact with God as God, that's one thing. But if you want to interact with Him as Abba, Father God, you need to understand the fatherhood nature of the Creator of your soul. Okay, that's number one. And how He rules and reigns. And He gave His Son. He didn't give like a guardian angel or Michael the Archangel in order to redeem you. He gave His Son. So there's a very huge family component in the kingdom of God. I want you to understand that. Secondly, for mothers and fathers, fathers need to be able to understand their role, not only with their wives, but their children, grandchildren, etc. There's a real key there. And then for you that are in ministry, if you're a minister, father, mother ministry, whether you're ladies or men, you need to understand the fatherhood component of ministry. You need to, if you're a CEO of a company, you need to understand the fatherhood of that, all of it. So these principles, Daryl, I'm going to kind of break them down, and I'm going to kind of ping pong back between the Father God, father of the household, father of the church, father in the business. Because all these components are really important, because if you can embrace them, they shape your thought, your actions, which determines your destiny.
Yeah, absolutely. Podcast at KurtLandry.com. If you have any questions, any concerns, anything that you'd like us to talk about, we've been fielding some of those and trying to work those into certain episodes. But that's podcast at KurtLandry.com. Also, if you want to help support a individual project or just anything that we're doing here at Kurt Landry Ministries, you can just go to KurtLandry.com/donate. So, Rabbi, walk me through a couple of those components from a base level and then build me up from there.
Okay. So let's do it biblically. Okay. We'll start what's always a good place to start. Fatherhood biblically is, number one, it is headship. Okay. It has to do with alignment in the household. It has to do with leadership. It has to do with the teacher. And so I'll just speak this to particularly fathers and husbands. You need to be able to, I don't want to say earn, but your behavior needs to be that your spouse and your children want you to be the headship. And the reason is because they can trust you. And why is that they can trust you? Because they see you going after God. If you're going after God's and God's wisdom, they like that. Your household, the father needs to be, God's leading the household, but the father needs to be leading. And
I guess let's slow down. And because as you're saying that, there's tons and tons of truth. So systematically, right, we're kind of working our way through the components. But let's say that you have a wife listening, right, or watching this episode, and they've been trying to communicate that to their husband, right? What are some ways that they can have a conversation and like address this first little component of the father, the husband being at the top there?
Yeah. Okay. Well, boy, we really should have Christy in on this episode because okay. Here's her struggle. Okay. She's not on here, so I can talk about her, and yeah. you know her. Okay. And everyone knows her here. First of all, Let's look at my wife. Okay. I'm just sharing this with you, and these are just facts. First of all, she comes from a family of geniuses. Her dad, her uncle, and her baby uncle, Vernon's youngest brother, was a statsologist for the University of Texas. Okay. Worked for NASA. So that level of IQ. And Christy comes from that. She has an extremely high IQ. She's beautiful. She has strawberry blonde hair, blue eyes, and freckles. She looks like a blonde, but realistically, this is somebody that is, she's very intelligent. Okay. And, so anyway, those are the facts. So now she gets saved first 3 years before. So she presses into the Lord with that brain, right? And she just absorbs. So she, as a pastor, I'll just say this. Her first 3 years in the Lord was like most people's maybe 10 years. She just like is ravenous, going to conferences, prayer meetings, studying herself. And so she gets very full. Now, all of a sudden, let's say, quote unquote, the idiot gets saved, me.
Okay.
Okay. With not such a high IQ. Okay. And listen, I'm not stupid, but I'm not at her level. Okay. We're just giving you the facts here. And I realize I do have a high IQ. I'm smart. It's not that, but I'm not as smart as she is. Okay. But praise God for this. I get saved. And that same fire and devotion, I turn into a total Jesus freak. I mean, almost like neglect my business. And I'm just like ravenous over this, everything with God. The problem is she is 3 years ahead of me. And this is a problem in a lot of families. She really is for 3 years on her own. She's the spiritual leader of the household, Daryl. She's praying. She knows God. I'm over here. I'm not saved yet. I'm not doing any of that. So then when I do get saved, for her to like shift the roles and say, uh-oh, now you're the spiritual head of the household.
That's tough.
Well, you can't.
Yeah.
I mean, let's practical. You can't. Yeah. She's got all this information. I don't. She has to wait on me to grow up. And so the transition, she was gracious. But the transition between where I could actually take the reins as the household, that took several years. So, but what happens is she still honored me and didn't dishonor me. And she had very creative ways of saying, well, you might want to consider this and you might want to consider that.
Yeah. What's the most creative way that she told you that you were doing something wrong? A lack of in a situation like, hey, I would appreciate, because I know in my marriage, like, I'm not very good at reading between the lines. I've gotten better, right, over the past couple years for sure. But
yeah, we're praying for you.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. Now, I mean, my wife is, from an IQ standpoint,
very smart,
very, very intelligent, and she has the spiritual gift of discernment, which I do not. I trust everyone. I go into it. You know, like, I just, it's not me. And so my wife, again, had to kind of figure it out. I'm still figuring it out currently, but what was some of those ways? Like, just give me one example. It doesn't have to be like a long story, but something that could be a good strategy, maybe a good example strategy for, a wife listening or watching, that maybe they could try a little gentle nudge towards their husband of saying, let's kind of do this.
Yeah. Maybe. Okay. Let's talk. No, and serious, because I know your family and I'm your rabbi and I pray for you. You're in a similar situation. And a lot of people are in similar situations where one spouse is that really has that gift of intelligence and wisdom. And so you have to be able to do that. You know, you have to be able to work as a team. That's why I don't think the Lord makes mistakes. When he brings people together, you know, the math of marriage is 1 + 1 = 1. You become one to strengthen. So with Christy, I'll just give you a short story. This is a true story. So when I was about 3 years born again, one of my business partners decides, listen, you are so anointed and so this and that and hunger of God. You got to call. Recognize it. Very nice. But he's also has unlimited resources. He's a multi-millionaire, okay? And he's young. And he's young in the Lord. He says, listen, you're going to stay on full salary, and we're going to send you to Bible school. And so you don't have to worry about money. You can stay in your own house. You can go to Bible school, all this stuff.
I like it.
And so anyway, that's what he was going to do, write the whole check. And Christie said no. And the reason she said no is because she had already had a visitation of the Lord, realizing that what I was called to do could not be tainted by biblical school or seminary, that what I was carrying didn't fit in that box, which she turns out now, in hindsight, it's right. Now, but the way that she presented that to me so that the family didn't implode was very tactful, in the sense that she just asked me questions. Do you, like, at that time, I was already working in Israel pretty heavily. She said, do you think that this school they're going to go to would be able to support you in what you do with Israel? And I said, oh, no, because this school is kind of a replacement, quasi, little bit anti-Semitic type Bible school.
It's kind of traditional seminary.
Exactly.
Theological school. Yeah.
So they said, do you really think that you're going to develop to be able to minister to the nation of Israel like the Lord said you would be in the future if you were tied to this? And I said, well, no. And she said, do you think that if you had this degree from this, do you think you could work with like the government of Israel? And I said, no. So that's what she did. She just brought out questions, something for me to think of. So anyway, I chose not to do it.
Yeah, I mean, she presented it in such a way that you already gave yourself the answer in the same breath.
Yeah.
Yeah, but well, it was soft, you know. It was kind of like you're letting yourself down.
Right.
Because you're probably really jacked about the opportunity.
Well, initially,
it sounds good.
Initially, yeah. I was all over it. And by the time she got done, it was like, boy, how did I think that? And in hindsight, oh my gosh, what a bullseye that she had, because I'll just say this, and you know how we work. The fact that we can work with the prime minister's office and the military in Israel and all the social services, like the way we do, just like in and out, is because when they vet us, it's just like, okay, let's vet him. Okay, who is he with? CLM, House of David. Well, here's the vetting on them. They're fine, kosher, boom, stamp and go. But if I was tied to like all these other different like groups, then what happens is if one of those groups had an issue, then
it's going to trickle down to you.
It's going
to
trickle down, and then they're going to say, listen, at the Israeli government, if they smell any slander or a problem, they just, what they do is they just go dark on you. You won't pick up the phone anymore. So anyway, because it's just us, and if we make a mess, we fix it. Okay. We don't make many messes, but when we do, they know we're going to stand behind it, and we fix it.
Okay. So what's your second component of this? You know, as we work our way kind of towards the end, and then more of a practical sense, because that was really good. I wanted to get kind of that flip side of saying, I know there's a lot of, I mean, because I was in a similar situation of intelligence, wisdom, discernment of saying, okay, I mean, like, I thought I was kind of being the leader of my house spiritually, but then I kind of found out I needed to do a lot more. And like do it more creatively, mm-hmm. and do it in different areas that wasn't necessarily spoken because it was between the lines.
Yeah. Well, listen, what I wrote here on the notes when I prayed this morning was headship, household, leader, and teacher. So I want to talk about teaching. As a father, the best thing you can do to teach is through example. That your actions have a lot more influence and power to your spouse and your children than your words. And so what happens is you have to mentally kind of be responsible to say, you know, I'm very aware of this now with little grandchildren, especially my grandchildren love to mimic and parrot Saba. I mean, if I do it, they're going to do it. It just doesn't, it's like a tape recorder. And, you know, I'm a practical joker and I like to do funny stuff. So if I do something, then, listen, we were having a birthday for Maddie this weekend. He turned two. And so the people were coming over. So what's Arabella do? Paul and Megan are in there fixing the food. Everyone's coming at, I think it was 4 o'clock. So here's Arabella at like 3:30, 3:45-ish. What she's doing? She's doing the knocks on the door, runs and hide to panic her mom and dad because they don't have the food ready, thinking that the other guests are coming early. Well, where did she get that from? That's a Sava trick. In fact, Megan even yelled out one time, Sava, thinking it was me coming over early doing the fake knock. So what I'm saying, but it's Bella. So Bella's over there running, and then Joseph sees it. And so now he's knocking at the door. And then finally, everyone has to say, if you don't stop knocking at the door, you're going to get a timeout. So, but my point is, you teach with your choices, you teach with your behavior. And when it comes to the Lord, it's so good, like, to say to them, like when they do overnights with us, they'll say, well, you know, like Saba's, you can't get to Saba at early in the morning because he's in his office spending time with the Lord. They've known that their whole life. You know, so Bella's 8 years old and she knows basically from about 8 to about 10, if she's doing an overnight, Saba's in his office spending time with the Lord. Well, what does she do when she spends time in the morning with the Lord? Where'd she learn that? Because she watched Saba. She watched her parents. So I think it's very important for you to realize that your habits and patterns are being watched. So give them something good that will reproduce and bring them closer to God.
Okay. All right. So what's the next one?
I think that breaking down biblical fatherhood, you need to be able to be feeding them. Okay. It's not the government. Listen, I'm not coming against people on welfare. I know there's times when you can need help, and I've been through those times. I've been down to a time where I couldn't feed my family. So I've learned to abound with little and much. But your responsibility to take care of your children, to feed them and your spouse, that's the husband's responsibility. You are to, and I know I'm going to catch heat on this, and I really don't care because I'm giving you the Bible. It's what the Bible says. I believe it. It's not even old school. But if you're going to have the love and honor from your spouse and children, they need to know that above all things, you're going to provide food for them spiritually and physically. You're going to provide food, nourishment. You have to provide nourishment. You have to be nourishing emotionally to their body, soul. You need to know how to have joy, bring joy into the household. You need to know how to bring the joy of the Lord. You need to be protecting them. They need to know that your house and your family is a safe place and that daddy, quote, will keep the house safe. They don't need to be, you know, fearful. And you need to be a provider of all things. You need to provide wisdom, knowledge, and understanding. But they need to know fatherhood is a reflection of God, and God is a reflection into the Father. And that's what we want. We want to know that the Lord's going to provide, protect, feed, and nourish us.
Yeah. So a ton of very simple biblical truth, very simple truth, right? I mean, about as easy as you went through that list, it all correlates. It all makes sense. Very, very simple. But now talk to one, the wife, right, who, again, kind of like how we started this episode by saying, how can she communicate this if she's feeling a certain way because those things aren't being provided? But then, very quickly, Rabbi, jump to the husband's side. So any men listening that feel a lack of what they're doing into this rotation, like saying maybe, hey, like I am struggling financially for X, Y, you know, it could be something to where, you know, I think how God has made men. I mean, like we want to be providers, right? I think men want to be fixers. And so we're really good at fixing. Our wives don't necessarily want us to fix. They want us to listen a lot of the time. So that's one area I kind of get myself in trouble. Instead of just listening, I try to instantly fix it. But talk to the men that either want to figure out how to get out of this rotation or figure out how to do better into it. So they're not doing it or they are doing it, but they want to get better.
Okay. So let's deal with what you brought up, because most men are like what you just said. So you don't want, so what happens is your wife has, let's say, 1200 words that she wants to expel and you to listen to in order to what you as a man could have understood at about 300 to 500. And so what happens is at the 300 to 500 level, you've already heard enough. You don't need extra drama.
This is good.
Yeah. Yeah. You don't need a schematic that, you know, I just put together some toys for the birthday. You don't need a schematic to know where all the stuff is. Just let me put this thing together. So part of the nurturing side of it is to understand that if you're going to minister to her, you have to listen to her words. And then even though that you already had the problem fixed at 300 words, the wisdom is don't say anything. Listen to her words. Give her a big hug at the end and kiss her and just say, listen, would you pray for me? I think I have an idea to fix this. And I just want, just bless me to do this.
Yeah. And
then you go and fix it.
So I think to your point there, and this is a laughable comment, but it's kind of funny, but there's a lot of truth in it. I think maybe along with it that once we're at the 300 to 500, so like we've already figured out what's the most practical, logical way to solve this and fix it. But what I've learned and observed is that sometimes even if you get up to the 1200 to 1500 words and you listen, but you've already figured it out way ahead, sometimes you still don't fix it. And you just listen and you just let it sit, and there's time that kind of goes by. And then your wife will come to you and say, okay, let's fix it.
Yeah.
You know, because like they just want to be heard. Right. And, yes. and understood, and they don't want a fixer in the moment. And, you know, they don't want one on the back end when they get done with the whole spill. They just wanted someone to listen.
What they actually are looking for is they want to feel value from you. They want validation that they're smart and that you're listening and that you value them as a partner. And let's say the problem, let's say, is the bathroom sink. More than they want the bathroom sink fixed is they want your approval and that you're a part of it. And so that's the key. So for being a good leader of the household is that you understand that your responsibility is to minister and nourish the important needs of your spouse to what she wants and not even what she's asking for.
So flip it now. You've answered that whole ordeal for the man, but how about, you know, the women out there, if they're trying to communicate some of this, right, to their husbands, how do they do it more efficiently?
Okay. Well,
don't get in trouble now, but
this is a subject that I feel very qualified because we've gone through this. And next year, next February, will be our 50th year wedding anniversary. So, you know, we've been through a lot. But here's the key is you have to, and it'd be better to ask Christy, and you might want to do a podcast with her on it. But the key is for the wife is to pray, and also timing. She needs to know when to bring up whatever she's asked, whatever her idea is for the change in the family, she needs to bring it up at the right time. And the right time has to do with having some discernment of, does the husband have the bandwidth for a long conversation? And
or a short one, right? If it's very pointed.
Right. And it's like, well, they need that discernment. I would say that where I see communication breakdown between men and women is if women want to try to bring something up at because they're really feeling it, doesn't mean that it's the right time for the husband to be able to. They need to understand if they bring it up, the husband's immediately going to run at 300 words to the toolbox and try to go and fix it. And so what happens is I think that physical touch is really important. I know when Christy has something important, she'll wait. And like, we're sitting down at our favorite chair. We have a love seat settee thing in our living room. And what she'll do is she'll put her hand on top of my hand. And it's almost like when that happens, it's like, oh no, here we go.
Yeah.
I'm getting ready. And she'll pat it. And then if she brings the other hand over and got the two hand hold,
get ready.
That one's personal. That's when, now let me tell you about what you need to fix about you. Now I'm just teasing. But my point is that you have to be able to say, listen, we need to, everything needs to be in we and us terms. We need to do this. You never go to your husband and say, you need to fix this. And you need, if you're doing the you thing, listen, I'm not a marriage counselor, but if you start going down that route, he's going to shut off. So what happens is you have to come with the we and us. Listen, I think we as a family need to be praying more about this. I think we as a family really, I think even this, listen, you've been working so hard, but I think you need to slow down a little bit and spend some more time with the family. Maybe we should take a vacation. I'm concerned because, you know, listen, you're doing such a great job, but at the same time, emotionally, I think I need to, as a family, we need a little bit more time. If you'll just approach it with the we thing, and then the key thing is, what do you think? Don't tell them what you think. You ask him what you planted the idea, but then you ask him, well, what do you think? And this is just from almost 50 years of marriage. This stuff works, but if you start going after the other person, then you're gonna have a fight. And a lot of times in fights, what happens is people say stuff that you can forgive, but you can't take it back.
Podcast at KurtLandry.com. If you got any questions, you want to send it to us. Also, we want to invite you, if you're watching this on YouTube or the One New Man app, especially on YouTube, leave a comment, share it with people on social media. It really, really helped the show. If you're listening to it on Spotify or Apple, or you're listening over at KurtLandry.com/podcast, leave us a review. That would be much appreciated as well. All right, Rabbi, so we're wrapping up this episode. Give me the last couple components, and then we're going to get to your final thoughts.
Okay, well, I'm going to talk about maintenance. Maintenance, you have to, in your family, the father, a fatherhood responsibility is what I call maintenance, and that's upholding that which you've established and encouraging and helping. And, you know, it says in Proverbs 13:22, a good man leaves an inheritance to his children's children. So I'll just be transparent about this. We're helping raise our grandkids. All right. First of all, they don't live in the world I grew up in. They're going into a world that it's going to be very different than what I grew up in business. So how do I train them at 8 and 4 and 2 for what's coming? Well, we don't know what's coming. So how do I teach the maintenance? I teach basic biblical principles of value and character and integrity, because that doesn't change. So no matter what comes, it's, you know, I don't know what tomorrow will bring, but I know who holds tomorrow. So if you'll plant the biblical principles, like make your yes be yes, give a firm handshake, look them in the eye. If an adult comes over to greet you and you're sitting down at a table, you stand up, say, yes, ma'am, yes, sir. All those those things will not change. That's not being Southern. That's not being... That is just being polite and being honoring. Because if you're polite and you're being honoring and you do it the way God does it, then what happens is you'll have favor all the days of your life. If you have favor, you can get anything done. You know, if the country totally goes Marxist or something bizarre, I pray it doesn't, but it won't make any difference what culture you're in. You can still prosper. If you'll teach them kingdom etiquette, kingdom behavior, and kingdom love, and they walk in Galatians fruit of love, peace, joy, long suffering. If you'll educate them in that, model that, then regardless of what's coming, they're going to prosper. That's maintenance.
Spiritual fatherhood. We hope this episode has bring and brought a ton of joy. And a lot of experience, a lot of examples that you can really take into practical steps. Again, if you love this show, if you want to share it, that'd be great. Just share the URL, share the YouTube channel, check out all other content on Kurt Landry Ministries YouTube and Facebook. Also, if you would like to donate, just go to kurtlandry.com/donate. You can see all the current projects that we have, and you can learn more about how you can support the ministry. All right, Rabbi, that's going to wrap it up for this episode. We'll see you next week.
All right. Thank you, Darrell.